This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In the late 1980s and early 1990s, men in Indianapolis's gay community began to disappear. Most were young, in their 20s or 30s, last seen at nightclubs or bars on the city's north side. For years, the pattern was noticed by family and friends, but largely overlooked by law enforcement. At the time, in part due to stigma around missing gay men. Behind these disappearances was Herb Baumeister, outwardly a family man, husband and father of three, and co-owner of a successful chain of thrift stores called Save-A-Lot. Baumeister lived with his family on an 18-acre estate in Westfield, Indiana, known as the Fox Hollow Farm. He maintained a secret double life, frequenting gay bars in Indianapolis and picking up men he would bring back to his property. Once home, Baumeister is believed to have strangled his victim, sometimes in or near his indoor swimming pool. A bizarre room decorated with dozens of mannequins posed as if at a cocktail party. Survivors described him as enjoying a disturbing asphyxiation game, choking men during sex acts. Only he often never let them go. The breakthrough came in the mid-1990s when a man known publicly under the pseudonym Tony Harris went to police with his story. Harris said he had been lured to Fox Hollow Farm, survived Baumeister's attempts to strangle him, and later recognized Herb's picture when investigators showed it to him. Harris's testimony helped focus attention on Baumeister as the prime suspect in those very disappearances. Meanwhile, Herb's wife, Julie Baumeister, had her own suspicions. She'd once found a human bone buried on the property, and grew increasingly uneasy about her husband's behavior. In 1996, after police linked Herb to multiple missing persons cases, Julie allowed investigators to search Fox Hollow Farm while Herb was away. What they found was staggering. Scattered across the wooded grounds behind the house and in a nearby creek, were thousands of bone fragments and human remains. Forensic analysis confirmed they belonged to at least 11 men, though investigators have long believed the true number could be 20 or more. Some remains were so badly decomposed or burned that only fragments could be identified. As the investigation closed in, Baumeister fled. In July of 1996, he drove to Ontario, Canada, and killed himself with a gunshot. He left behind a rambling suicide note that mentioned financial and family troubles, but made no reference to the murders. Because he died before being arrested or tried, Herb Baumeister was never formally convicted and technically remains labeled an alleged serial killer. However, the sheer volume of remains on his property and the testimony of survivors left little doubt about his guilt. He's now suspected, like I said, of at least 11 confirmed murders tied directly to Fox Hollow Farm and possibly connected to the earlier I-70 strangler killings that claimed at least 9 other victims along Interstate 70 in the 1980s. We'll be talking about that very place, Fox Hollow Farm, what it is today, what it was, and the legacy of Herb Baumeister, and what happens on that property that involves more than just the living. It's a very interesting conversation we are about to dive into with author and paranormal investigator Richard Estep. Richard, welcome to the program. Happy to have you here. I believe we spoke a very long time ago on another program that I did and do Real Ghost Stories Online, but I'd be damned if I could remember anything we talked about all those years ago.
Which book we were covering either.
I don't either. But this is such a fascinating case because it involves true crime. This is where we are now in a true crime show. And the paranormal, and we're getting, you know, into Halloween. So, of course, it becomes a little more topical for true crime. But I want you to take me back here. What brought your interest to Fox Hollow Farm? What was the original spark that made you go, I want to pay some attention to this place?
Well, it had been covered on a TV show called Ghost Adventures. Love it or hate it, you know, that show does bring locations to light. And what struck me about the Fox Hollow case was that exactly that. I'd never heard of it. Most people hadn't. It amazes me that it took until this year for there to be a streaming documentary series about this particular case. And what really struck in my crawl was that there was very little done to memorialize the men, the victims who had lost their lives there. Mm-hmm. They were essentially forgotten in the broader picture anyway. Their loved ones that survived, at least those who knew that they'd lost somebody at Fox Hollow, of course, still grieved them. But so many people had no idea that this case even existed. And it also served, Tony, to really highlight the dangers of individuals, predatory individuals that prey upon marginalized sections of our society, as Herb Baumeister did upon the gay community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's... When I heard about this story, I actually heard about it not through the paranormal channels, but I heard about it through the crime channels. And I was just kind of shocked that I had never heard of this story before. Yeah. With this amount of death and just weird behavior. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So you'd seen it on Ghost Adventures, and obviously it sparked your curiosity. Where did you take it from there?
I reached out to the owner, a gentleman called Rob Graves, genuinely, that's his name. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, I would love to come in and do some research here and see if I can uncover something, see what's going on. And he wrote back and said, you know, I'm kind of skeptical about all of the ghost stuff, but my wife is convinced. She's had some experiences. So has my lodger, Joe. So he invited me to go in with a small team. And we uncovered enough on repeat visits that I'd wanted to tell that story in a book. And I was hoping that it would be a case of come for the ghosts, stay to remember the individuals who are behind this haunting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was my intent with writing the book. The fact that to this day, despite the best efforts of the local coroner, still so many of them are unidentified.
When they look at the numbers of missing gay men at that time in that community versus how many they found, it's a fairly populated area, I guess you could say. So is there a staggering number that have never been identified or never found?
It's almost impossible to quantify, Tony, because the sad fact of the matter is if this had been, if her Baumeister had been preying exclusively on, you know, college students, middle class, upper class people, things of that nature, people that were missed, number one, I think this would have been shut down a whole lot more quickly than it was. And number two, we would be able to say with a greater degree of clarity exactly how many victims there were. But the gay community was ostracized during the early 1990s.
Sure.
You know, you had the AIDS epidemic going on also, and people were very dismissive. Some of these men had been ostracized from their families. They were couch surfing, you know, or living with friends, not easy to pin down. They would move on. There was one quote when somebody was trying to raise awareness of the disappearances and said, oh, they probably moved on to San Francisco. And then a particularly horrific quote that really was heartbreaking was somebody said, oh, they probably died of AIDS. You know, I mean, how awful, how absolutely awful.
This is like, oh, it's an afterthought.
Well, I will say that Baumeister is also known as the I-70 Strangler because as often is the case, you guys know this, of course, doing this show, whenever there is a serial killer identified, detectives will go back and they will look at unexplained deaths and or disappearances in the vicinity over the time period they were active. And they found a number of deaths along the I-70 corridor, which matched up with Herb Baumeister's business trips.
Is that how he was able to operate so long undetected? Because people were just, they were not giving a damn about people they should be giving a damn about.
That's the root cause of it, you know? And without getting too philosophical, I'd argue that's almost the root cause of all evil. You know, when you marginalize and depersonalize human beings. But I think that the initial killings, Baumeister picked up hitchhikers. Picked people up at truck stops or wherever it may be on his way traveling for business. What's very telling is that those interstate murders stopped the same year that the Baumeister family bought and moved into Fox Hollow Farm, because now he had this very private, secluded playground, controlled environment where he didn't need to run the risk of dumping bodies by the roadside anymore.
Let me ask you about that with the kind of being his playground after these, after he was, or after he died, obviously he was never quite caught, but they were closing in. What happened to the property? Did his wife and kids move out, or was it sitting there for a while? What was, give me the timeline of this thing from him to the new owners.
Yeah, sure. So, Baumeister got wind that the game was up, and he ran for the Canadian border. He drove, crossed the border. We know that he was picked up, unfortunately wasn't arrested, by a Canadian Mountie for sleeping in his car, like under a bridge. So he took his own life on a beach in Canada, knowing full well, I think, what was about to be uncovered. After that, his wife and children, they moved out of Fox Hollow Farm. She changed her name, and who could blame her for that? And went to try and build some semblance of a normal life. And the house sat empty for quite some time. It was on the real estate market. The price would drop and drop. It's a gorgeous house. I mean, if you've ever seen pictures or video footage, it's, you know, it was on something like 18 acres.
Yeah.
The price was just disproportionately low. And so when Rob and Vicky Graves were looking for a house, they're equestrians. Rob calls them horse people, you know. They were looking for somewhere with a paddock, with stables, which Fox Hollow has. It was perfect and the price was great. And then the realtor told them, you know, you just have to be aware of what happened at this house, of its tragic history. And they were ultimately, and they got the house at a significant markdown. But between Baumeister and them, the only occupants were raccoons, who had broken in and kind of ransacked the place. If you've ever seen what raccoons can do inside a house, it was not pretty.
Before, obviously, they were on the search for Baumeister, something happened. Someone came forward and someone got away, it seems, correct? I mean, explain how the authorities were led to that property at Fox Hollow.
So I don't want to make it look like the police weren't putting in some effort. They did put plainclothes detectives in gay bars in Indianapolis, which was Baumeister's hunting ground. Mm-hmm. But he was a very kind of sporadic killer. He used to go hunting men when his family, his wife and kids were out of town. They had a lake house on Lake Wawasee they would go visit. So, you know, there were some years where he would kill at 6-month intervals. And that's a long amount of time to be putting multiple, you know, plainclothes detectives in multiple bars. And the biggest furore was caused by members of the gay community themselves. Mm-hmm. They were saying, hey, we're disappearing. Watch one another. Watch out for one another. Watch each other's backs. They were putting up missing persons flyers, things of that nature, all in an attempt to raise awareness. Where it gets really interesting is when this one individual enters the picture, and he claimed to be the victim that got away. He went to the police and said that Baumeister had tried to drug him, but he had gotten the better of Baumeister, had managed to, in fact, drug Baumeister, and had gotten away, and that he was killing people at this something farm. Now, this was pre-Google Maps, you know. Mm-hmm. It was not easy to find something farm in the middle of rural Indiana.
Sure.
You have to troll hundreds, if not thousands, of miles of rustic rural byways, you know, to find all of the farms. Mm-hmm. And the police actually had gone to Fox Hollow Farm on one occasion and had not figured out it was the right location. So it was Baumeister's vehicle in the end, though, that gave him away. He was a big advocate, a big aficionado, rather, mm-hmm. of British cars. So Land Rovers especially. And they got him with a vehicle registry, was what finally nailed him. He was seen leaving a nightclub with one of his victims.
Whatever became of the individual then that turned him in?
Well, for the longest time, he had spoken about his experiences on a TV show, but insisted on anonymity. Mm-hmm. They shot him from the back, you know, in kind of silhouette. But he spoke about his experiences. Then when I wrote my book, he agreed to be a source, mm-hmm. but wanted a nom de plume. He wanted me to change his identity, which you are obligated to do as an author. If someone wants to, you know, go on the record anonymously, you have to honor that. Mm-hmm. So I did. I gave him a pseudonym in the book. And then finally he came forward as they were making the documentary, which is now airing on Hulu, the Fox Hollow murders. Mm-hmm. He came forward and showed his face, gave his name, went full public.
Yeah.
So that's a man called Mark Goodyear.
Yes. Yes. I recall that. I watched that doc. It's been a couple of months now, but yeah, I remember his accounts. Were there questions about all of his accuracy in his accounts of this man? Because correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize. I was focusing more on the paranormal side of this today when I was doing some research. So I want to go back to this. But weren't there questions about not everything that he had to do with him, but the relationship there, correct?
Oh, I think you can go a step further and say that his credibility and
credibility in general,
is absolutely questionable.
What's your thoughts on all that?
Well, I'll say outright that when he and I interviewed, Mark likes to hold court. He likes to tell stories. He loves to feel that he has an audience, you know, held in the palm of his hand. Mm-hmm. But he outright told me, you know, you'll never know what I'm telling you if it's true or if it isn't. Mm-hmm. And when a source, and also this is the only source that is alive, at least, that we know of, that was on the inside at that time. So it's immensely frustrating when you're trying to get to the truth of a narrative, mm-hmm. and your one reliable source tells you, hey, just know that I could be exaggerating or even making some of this stuff up. And his story has changed over the years. I mean, mm-hmm. A bunch of it does. One of the things that I find very, always found hard to believe, his story that, you know, he Herb was going to drug him. He switched the tables. He drugged Herb. And then spent 45 minutes wandering around Fox Hollow Farm, investigating and exploring. Now, I can't speak for you, Tony, but if I've just escaped the clutches of a serial killer, I'm to the front door and you're not going to see me for dust. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to the phone to call the cops. I'm not exploring his house while he's drugged unconscious. It mm-hmm. made sense. He also gave details to me of other men he claimed that had happened that had not been uncovered. He talked about an accomplice that supposedly lived at Fox Hollow and worked with her Baumeister. And then he gave me this funny look, kind of half smile that he would do every once in a while. And he said, you know, that there are ghosts in this place and they talk to me. I'm psychic. And they talk to me about, you know, how they died. And I'm like, oh, really? And then he kind of leaned in and said, well, I mean, otherwise, I would definitely know some things that I shouldn't know, wouldn't I? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You know more than your story means you should be able to tell me. But wait, the ghosts told you so, right? So I try not to discount anything entirely. Mm-hmm. But I'm not walking into a police station to a detective to say, hey, there are more dead bodies in this murder house from 15 years ago. The ghosts told a guy
who was
you know, good luck getting that warrant. I mean, just on their part, you know, go before the judge. Special evidence has really not been applied since Salem, has it?
No. might have some issues with that there. Yeah.
Right, precisely. So, and he knows all of this. So, you know, I think that he's telling the truth in many regards. He's exaggerating in some others, and he's outright lying in others. And then we come back to that whole, if you'll lie to my face once, you know, why won't you do it 5 times, 10 times?
Why do you think he's playing this game? Is it control? I mean, one would think if you truly, you know, wanted good, anything good to come out of, you know, your own previous actions or your relationships or this nightmare, it would be to tell the truth for the sake of all of these people and all of these families. Why would you be coy? Why would you be dragging this little carrot on a stick? I mean, it seems really dark. I mean, just malevolent if it's treated like a game, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and I do give him credit for coming forward to the police and saying, this is happening and it needs to stop.
Sure.
I always start with that. I can only speculate as to Mark's motives. You know, I haven't
seen him
since I was at Fox Hollow Farm 6 years ago, I believe, was when I finished kind of the research on that book. I can only speculate, but I do know that this is a man who loves to, he's theatrical.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
If you watch him on television, there's no question. There's a performance going on there.
Sure.
And I think that makes him, it gives him the spotlight, doesn't it?
It makes you wonder a little bit about, is he believing the performance when he's giving it? And is that why the story's changed so much? And can he even keep track anymore of what is real and what is not after decades of telling and spinning the tales?
You raise a great point, Tony, because as the scientists tell us, we don't really remember things. We remember the last time we remembered them, and we create that mental construct and we remember that. And the more times you do that, the more, of course, and it's like, you know, for those of us of a certain age, it's like Xeroxing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get those kind of impurities, those distortions creep in each and every time you do it, and you tell the story, it cements that version in your brain. I think he's told so many different variations of the story to so many people. Mm-hmm. My suspicion is the earliest ones told to law enforcement were probably the most, well, he remembered the most at that time, but how accurate they were versus were there any intentional distortions, that's the key question.
I would tend to agree. I think when you look at it, when people reveal things to law enforcement and things like that, quite often the first story is going to be the most accurate story. And it's not always because someone's trying to be deceptive, but like you said, memory is a playback. It's rebuilt every single time you're doing it. It's almost like playing a game, like Xerox was a great one, playing a game of telephone with yourself. Yep. Every day, go back and do that. Tell yourself exactly that same long sentence you said the next day and keep doing it for like a week or a month and see what sentence you end up with versus what you originally had. That's her memory. That's how it works. And it's kind of disturbing sometimes if you ever have memories that you know were videotaped. I'm talking like back in the 70s or 80s. And then you see that or just an image. And you, in your mind, have this image of this is what this place looked like. And then that image does not match up with your memory as well as you thought you did. And it's just,
I was going to say, and also we tend to want to remember things that cast us in the best possible light, and we conveniently admit things that don't. So the same's true whether you're remembering breakfast or murder.
That's very true. Stacey, thoughts?
Yeah. Richard, I wanted to ask about one of the things that strikes me most about this case is a case that comes up here in Wisconsin where I live currently and where Tony's from. Jeffrey Dahmer. There are some extreme parallels to this case as well. Obviously, the exploitation of gay men and the mannequins. Can you talk a little more about that? Are you aware of the correlation between the two?
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that, because when they cut the trailer for the Hulu series, one of the quotes that really resonates was, "He's the Dahmer you've never heard of."
Exactly.
Because yes, absolutely, Stacey, there are parallels. I think that the mannequins, I do have Mr. Goodyear's interpretation of that. He claims that Herb Baumeister had created like a backstory for each one of them, that he had named them, and that he had asked Herb Baumeister why the mannequins were there, and that Herb had answered in the third person, because the master of Fox Hollow Farm does not like to be alone. Which is chilling and interesting, because if true, it implies, you know, maybe another personality at work, or something of that nature.
Interesting.
But the mannequins were dressed for a beach party. You know, they were Hawaiian shirts and swimsuits and things of that nature. I do wonder if they were a safe, and this is conjecture, obviously, Stacey, but if they were a safe audience for Herb Baumeister, that he maybe enjoyed the voyeuristic aspect of somebody watching him kill a victim, and that what better audience in terms of they can't tell the cops, they can't, you know, tell on you if they are mannequins. So I wonder if he didn't enjoy being observed, and that the mannequins fulfilled that need.
Wow.
I'm wondering though too, he had a family. It's not Michael Jackson in his house with Peter Pan statues. You know, this is a guy with, I mean, a wife, and there's kids too, right?
Yeah, true. But
and nobody's going, "Hey, dad's got a weird mannequin fetish," or maybe they were.
I mean, to be fair, a couple of things strike me about the family situation. After it all came to light, Julie went on Oprah to maintain her innocence. And I haven't spoken with Julie. I don't know. I will say this as a general statement. I have sympathy for any serial murderer's family.
Sure, yeah.
Different way, they are victims themselves. You know, they never
completely.
They never asked for this or agreed to be a party to it. The Baumeister's marriage was extremely rocky.
Okay.
Statements Julie made. They were living separately within the house, in fact, Herb and Julie. Herb's business was failing, which kind of escalated his behavior, downward spiral, and his murders became more frequent and I think more slapdash. And I suspect the kids were just doing their own thing. But in Julie's defense, you know, Herb was acting, kind of strangely, but his nickname was Weird Herb. Everyone you talked to that knew him personally would say, you know, he was a quiet man. He was not the party crowd, the fun type. And they would say, oh, he'd give you the shirt off his back, though. He was real nice. And then they would all go, or most would go, but he was weird. That same line, and his nickname indeed was Weird Herb. Now, I'm weird. Let me tell you, I talk to dead people on my time off when most people are going to a Broncos game or taking a cruise. So weird is not always bad.
Sure.
But Herb is definitely strange. In a not good way. And I think that the pool was, there was also a man cave area down there with a wet bar and so on. Mm-hmm. I think that was his kind of secret life. I don't know if it became clear to Julie that Herb was gay or not, but I think that in all marriages, there are secrets to a greater and a lesser degree. It's hard to blame any spouse when your significant other starts acting strangely. The first conclusion you jump to isn't going to be, I'll bet that he's going to bars when I'm out and picking up men and murdering them in our basement. That's probably not on the list, right?
Well, it depends how much Dateline you watch.
Yeah.
What your husband's up to, I guess.
Yeah. But I suspect, you know, if Julie suspected anything, she probably thought that Herb was having an affair. I don't know if she thought he was seeing men, if she knew about that side of his life. But I don't see, you know, how it would have been apparent that this was happening until the discovery of the first bones at mm-hmm. the back of the house. And that makes things a little more complex.
How has the kids or anything ever spoken up or said anything about dad publicly?
Not that I'm aware of. And whenever I've done anything about this, I've tried to respect their privacy, you know.
Oh, sure.
To rebuild their own lives and so on and so forth. So no, not that I'm aware of in a public forum.
None
of them were interviewed on the documentary series, and I didn't.
And in no way am I like insinuating that they knew what he was doing. I'm just more curious of their story of like what on earth when they look back on that. Of you know, I wonder if retrospectively some of the weirdness is like, oh God, you know, and, I mean, and you just didn't fine, see it at that moment.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from all accounts, Herb and Julie both lavished, you know, presents on their kids. They didn't want for anything. I think Herb was very emotionally twisted, and that was probably his way of expressing love the only way he knew how for his children.
Yeah.
But it was one of the kids that found a human skull behind the house, Fox Hollow, and used it as brothers as the world over would take that opportunity to terrify his sister with. Which really brought this to light the first time out.
Can confirm. Yep. That's akin to chasing your sister around with a snake, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's a human skull. And so the way that went down was that Julie said, well, where did you find that? And he said, well, there are a load of bones. There are a bunch of them behind me in the woods behind the house. And there were. When Herb came home, Julie confronted him. And he said that it was his father's skeleton from medical school because Herb's dad was a doctor. So, you know, he said that he had just disposed of it out there, which, again, sounds a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But checks-ish.
Well, ish, except, you know, the human body having 206 bones. Had anybody gone into those woods to investigate further, they would have found far more than one human body's worth of bones scattered out there. Yeah, and some of them, you know, I mean... When the final recovery effort was made, they found human wrist bones with arms with handcuffs still on them.
Oh,
I have a medical skeleton in my office because I'm a paramedic educator for a living. It mm-hmm. doesn't have handcuffs on it.
That would be really disturbing if it did.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Somebody walks in. What's this all about? Yeah. Before we move into more the paranormal end of things, Todd, do you have anything you want to ask or add into this here?
I'm just a little crazed by the whole thing. I'm blown away by the story. I have not had a chance to follow up much with it, but I'm blown away. And Richard, you made the comment about how the gay community was marginalized. And if this was going on, which obviously it was, how many other places in the country, in the world, was something similar like this happening? That's kind of what blows me away.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Todd. And also, you know, we see this with sex workers. We see this with addicts. We see this with people experiencing homelessness. Serial killers, and I hate to say the smart ones, use these as their victim pools. You know, there's a reason. They'll catch you if you're killing people that are going to be missed.
Yeah.
But if you are targeting the marginalized and the disenfranchised, you can get away with it for a lot longer, as Baumeister proved. And I still think, to your point, Todd, how many other Herb Baumeisters are out there that have never come to light and maybe never will?
And take a look at Rex Huerman, the Gilgo Beach alleged serial killer. This is somebody who was targeting the sex workers. This was the exact pool he was extracting from. So it probably is more prevalent than we have any idea.
Absolutely. Well, another disturbing thing is too, you know, what other groups are marginalized right now that would be targeted? We're talking about the time in the 80s and 90s and this timeline here. Today, what groups would that be? Who might be, you know, if they disappeared, that they, you know, either they wouldn't be unfortunately missed, or there would be nobody talking about it, or nobody would want to talk about it for their own fears. So how many Herb Baumeisters are out there right now doing the same thing with other marginalized groups right now, where folks just tend to be disappearing from at large rates?
I think that one of the main ways in which the world has fundamentally changed technologically, though, is this. So I think financially, those that are unable to afford a phone of their own, it's harder to track them. If you have no digital footprint, if you have no phone, it's a lot easier to get off the grid. But we also live in the age of the Ring doorbell. We live in a time when there are cameras literally everywhere. So doing what Baumeister did should, by rights, be significantly harder today. Should. But I think his victim pool would probably have leaned more toward the those experiencing homelessness or the addicted.
Yeah, I would think that immigrants and things of that nature, too, would be in that area of just... pray for another person like this if they're out there today, where they don't have the Ring doorbells necessarily, and there isn't that level of security, and there isn't that level of awareness. And yeah, that's just, it's scary to think about. Let's talk about how you, you know, you got in contact. You told us about that a little bit with Rob Graves, which did you believe that was his name when you first...
I just am used to referring to him as the unfortunately named Rob Graves.
It's true.
And he bears it with good grace, but absolutely.
And it's not like a radio name or something that he's stuck with it forever.
It's not a pseudonym. It would be literally the worst pseudonym we could have tagged.
That's funny. Well, so let's tell me about you get in contact. You'd seen this on Ghost Adventures. What did you want to do when you got in contact with Rob? Did you want to talk about it, learn about it, go there, try and experience something? How did that all go down?
I like to put boots on the ground when I write a book. If at all possible, I like to go to the location and spend some time there, conducting research, experiential and evidence gathering in equal measure. Rob, to his credit, was like, yeah, okay, we'll open up our home to you. Try not to be too intrusive. Don't bring a whole parade of people. So I went with a small team of, I believe, 5 investigators the first time and did some preliminary research. It was the proverbial dark and stormy night. We found that over the next few days, Fox Hollow Farm did have paranormal activity going on, things that we couldn't explain. I think that it would be, you know, it's very obvious that the haunting ties in with the atrocities which occurred there.
What did you experience yourself? What was your gut level impression when you walked in, and then what preceded that?
Well, to quote Carl Sagan, I try and be more scientific and I don't think with my gut, but I know what you mean. So we deployed a bunch of equipment, recorders particularly, and I was particularly interested in the swimming pool. Ghost Adventures had not gotten into the pool. And I understand why, having been in it. Number one, it's kind of uncomfortable for, you know, to go into a swimming pool where you know that a number of individuals have been killed. And number two, I went in, it was freezing cold, so cold. And Rob, you know, he said, I like you, Richard, but it cost me $800 to bring that pool up to temperature. I don't like you that much. So it was just freezing, but we played some of Herb's favorite music. You know, we'd been told by Mark Goodyear that his very favorite song was Blue Bayou by Linda Ronstadt. So we would play that, and we brought the lights down, you know, and tried to make it a kind of convivial atmosphere in there. And then I went swimming. My colleagues were recording video and audio, and we recorded what sounded like a growl, a little bit disconcerting. We recorded the sound of a man's voice whispering the name of my wife. I think one of the more disturbing things happened on the last night. So I had booked a hotel so that we could get out of there at maybe 3 a.m, grab some sleep, and then fly home. So we sealed up the house, left everything as we'd found it. The Graves were sleeping upstairs. We were primarily working in the basement. So sealed it up, went back to our hotel, maybe 3:30 a.m. I hit the hay immediately, and at 4 o'clock or thereabouts, my phone goes off, and it is Vicky Graves, Rob's wife. And she said, "You know, Richard, you guys have been great house guests. Thank you. But you are making so much noise down there, stomping around. And Rob and I have work tomorrow." And there was a pause, and I said, "Vicky, I'm at the Best Western."
No.
Yeah, which was kind of her reaction too, Stacey. So it's like, Rob, get the gun. So Rob, who is afraid of no man or ghost, goes downstairs and finds that the patio door, which I had locked, was open. And yet not a thing was out of place, but they both heard this sound of heavy movement stomping around downstairs right after we had left.
Wow.
Was it raccoons?
You know, if they can pick locks, I'm even more scared of raccoons than I was.
Well, they do have little thumbs, don't they?
Possible. It's possible. But no, in all seriousness, things like that, they're not unheard of at Fox Hollow either.
Yeah.
The good news, as far as I'm concerned, is that the paranormal activity there now is beginning to wind down. It's becoming much less common than it was in the mid-2010s. So, you know, it's become more of a family residence. And my theory on it is twofold. When you look at a haunting, you know, unfinished business is one of the classic reasons behind a haunting, isn't it? Well, what more unfinished business can there be? Number one, you have someone who was never brought to justice. Firstly, Herb Baumeister was never charged of anything, let alone convicted. To this day, he remains a presumed serial killer, you know? Mm-hmm. So justice was never done. Number two, you have how many sets of human remains which were not given a Christian burial. Even to this day, you know, that they're still not properly interred. And there was no memorial for the victims. The memorial, the first one, was only put up last year with funding from a local organization. So, you know, the very definition of unfinished business, you have it at that place. And that's before you think about the trauma that went into that that entire situation. So, but I do think that now there has been this effort by the local coroner to identify through DNA testing some of these men. Hundreds of people, I believe it's now thousands actually, came forward in the aftermath of the TV show and volunteered DNA swab samples. So the identification process is starting to work, and they are able to put more names to Baumeister's victims, which I think is wonderful.
Is the number still sitting where it's at 11 now, but I know that it was speculated to be up to 20. Is it speculated that it could be higher than that, or?
It could certainly be higher. And the key is identification as well.
Yeah. So,
but Herb didn't bury anybody. It's one of the things, not to speak ill of another author, but one of the things that really annoyed me was that the first book I ever saw, and was the only book at the time about the Fox Hollow murders, was called Where the Bodies Are Buried. There were no bodies buried.
Yeah.
Baumeister actually crushed them, burned them, chopped them up, you know, but he did not bury them. He left them above ground, which meant that all of the wild animals would scatter them far and wide. And that made the job of the detectives and the investigators exponentially harder. Because not only did you have them scattered over this wide area to such an extent that they're still turning up today, but you also had damage because of the elements. You know, these animals had gnawed at them, so some of them had been chewed on, and made the identification and recovery process just so much more difficult than it would have been if he had buried them.
Gosh.
It's just such a coldness toward these human beings, just to not even care about them in life and in death, just they're disposable. I mean, he probably paid more attention to his trash than he did these victims.
You know, have you seen the video about it's either a squirrel or a raccoon. Have you seen the video on the news story?
No. Not this one.
I would encourage you to go look it up. And if you put it into a search engine, it's on YouTube. Herb Baumeister, and it's either a raccoon or a squirrel. I always forget. But either way, it's a local news story, and it was done at the height of the Fox Hollow murders. Herb Baumeister comes home from work, and he finds this poor dead, I'm going to go with squirrel, but squirrel in the by the side of the road. And there is a road painting crew. You know the people that spray the yellow lines on the roads? Mm-hmm. They're working his street. And he says to his son, you know, you watch. They're not even going to move this. They're just going to spray paint over it. And they did. So Herb, incensed by this, calls and complains to the Department of Transportation that they have defiled the body of this poor dead animal. And so they send a news crew. I guess it's a slow news day. They send a news crew to Fox Hollow Farm. So Herb, in his best bank manager's jacket, as it looks like, is standing there in the driveway of Fox Hollow Farm, smugly telling this reporter, whoever did this should have a chalk line drawn around their career, you know, like a victim's body. I mean, this is out there, and he's trying to kind of be charismatic, but you're just looking at him, and as he's going on, he's saying, you know, this poor animal was abused, and it deserves so much better in death than it got from these people. And he knows that right behind him in the trees are festering the remains of these young men that he put there.
Yeah.
And he's so bland. Like, you wouldn't talk to this guy at a party. You would find some, you know, urgent reason to go check your email or something. He's that dull. But there's just this look on his face. And it just kind of says, if you only knew what I know, that I brought you here. How many serial killers would want a news crew within 50 miles of their home, let alone in their driveway, to talk about this? But he does. He brings them in. There's this kind of gleam in his eye. And I've thought about this over and over. On the one hand, there's the possibility that he's really enjoying, you know, the kind of, hey, watch the left hand, but you don't know what the right hand's done. You know, this whole idea of we're making this big song and dance about a squirrel, and I'm so sly and so cunning that I killed actual humans, you know.
Yeah.
But almost as chilling, to speak to Stacey's point, is this possibility that, you know, you hear plenty of absolute monsters that are kind to animals and love animals. You know, even Hitler loved his dog.
Yeah.
Like, does he truly value the life of this squirrel while having an utter disregard for the human beings that he put into the woods behind him?
It's a crazy dichotomy of personality that you can have this monster over here and this loving, empathetic person over here that, oh my gosh, this animal has suffered.
Yeah.
Look what you've done over here. How does this exist at that crossroads?
We saw this with Dennis Rader, the BTK, you know, the guy that was supposedly like a great dad and was very high up in his church and very compassionate, was, of course, torturing and murdering strangers. So it's almost as though they're able to put this kind of in a box mentally and then kind of seal it off when it's time to go back to normal life.
Yeah. Yeah, and because he was charismatic, you got Bundy, you got so many that had it, and yeah, they were the last people you would suspect, and that's why they got away with it for so long. The other creepy perspective on that is, you know, only like 50% of these, you know, murders, homicides are actually solved. So that means there's a lot of people out there who are still getting away with it, that are better than them that have been caught. And that's kind of a creepy thought.
Well, you say even creepier, Tony, is solved, but then how many go undetected?
The owners, Rob Graves and his family, I know that they've had experiences there. If you were to summarize, you know, what they've experienced and why they still like to call it home.
They experience everything from seeing the apparition of a young man with no legs walking through the trees on their property. And this young man was identified by two eyewitnesses as looking like one of Herb Baumeister's victims. So you have that. You have some of the classic poltergeist phenomena. You have objects, a power flex from a vacuum cleaner being jerked out of the wall socket while Vicky was vacuuming, things of that nature. You had what was a pretty alarming attack happen to the lodger, Joe, swimming in the pool where the murders took place. He was pulled under the water. And the way he described that experience to me, it was very reminiscent of the opening scene of Jaws,
mm-hmm.
you know, being pulled underwater violently by an unseen force when there was nobody within touching range of him. Things of that nature just kind of spiraled, especially when they brought in Joe, this young man who was about the same age as many of Baumeister's victims. I think that acted as a I actually love that they do, because since they moved in, you've had all of these, you've got this negative energy, right? Whether you believe in energy and the new age aspects of things, mm-hmm. or what you will, is almost irrelevant. You have this place where something horrific happened. There was a completely understandable movement to just have the city buy the place and knock it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it didn't become a shrine to ghouls. I mean, there's a reason you can't go visit Dharma's apartment block now, right?
Yeah, it's gone.
And I think we can all get behind that.
Sure.
But what the Baumeisters did was they turned this place of darkness into a family home, mm-hmm. and they celebrate Christmases and holidays, and you know, they have a family life there. And I think they're almost painting over the darkness with positive energy, with good vibes. And mm-hmm. I like the idea that this place of just such evil things has been reclaimed.
Yeah.
It has been turned into, you know, a family house again. I almost feel like that's a small win for the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would think, I mean, if you're a spirit and you're in this place and this is where you are supposed to be, or where you're trapped, or whatever, what it is, I would imagine, you know, it being a place of happiness and people that are caring and loving wouldn't be a bad place to haunt, if that's what you're doing. But yeah. Very interesting story. Todd, do you have anything you want to throw in here or ask on this?
I don't believe so. Again, I do a little paranormal investigation as well, Richard, so I'm very interested in what you found there and the fact that you did get evidence. Besides tell the story about what went on at the farm is truly incredible. So
thank you very much.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Really interesting to hear the true crime and the paranormal aspect of it. Those are two things that I've always very much enjoyed. If you want to check out the book, Richard Estep, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, you can get it wherever books are sold, and audiobook as well. It looks like it's going fairly good for you over there on Audible. Are you narrating?
I am not. I have a great face for the keyboard and a great voice.
No, not true. For those of you who are not watching the YouTube portion of this, he would not be coming.
All right.
You should also be narrating it. That's just my personal opinion.
Fine with you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's going to wrap up this episode. Let us know your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and that is where you will find us. And press subscribe while you are there as well. Until next time, for all of us here at the Hidden Killers podcast, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today.
See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.